Welcome to Outbeat Now. We're one of the four monthly programs airing every Sunday night right here on KRCB Radio. Outbeat Now is a public affairs program for and about the LGBT community here in the North Bay. I'm Jeff Basham.
And I'm Greg Moralia. Jeff, Happy New Year. It's our first show of the year.
Absolutely. Happy New Year. And I hope all of you listening enjoyed our Christmas special that aired on Christmas night last month. So tonight, we have a unique community organization in the first segment joining us. They're from West County, and they're known as the Friends of Rio Nido. This amazing group has taken on the responsibility for revitalizing West County's smallest and perhaps forgotten town. Members of their board of directors are here tonight to share all they have accomplished and their vision for the future. And Greg, what's on deck for Outbeat Youth?
Well, I'm actually really excited about this. City College of San Francisco has started an LGBT studies degree program. And ironically, about the same time that they got their program certified, Napa Valley College announced the start of an LGBT studies certificate program. So we're going to have Dr. Ardell Thomas, who is the chair of the LGBT studies program at City College, as well as Professor Diana Shabodi from Napa Valley College here to tell us all about these great educational opportunities focusing on the LGBT community.
Well, stay tuned for that. Sounds very exciting. And up next, we have the Outbeat Radio News.
And good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, January 8th, 2012. In Washington, D.C. this week, more than 80 mayors from across the country announced their support for marriage equality, predicting that it would one day come to all of their cities. They pledged their support as part of the launch of a brand new effort called Mayors for the Freedom to Marry. Included are the mayors from the five largest U.S. cities, Michael Bloomberg of New York, Antonio Villaraigosa of Los Angeles, Rahm Emanuel of Chicago, Anise Parker of Houston, and Michael Netter of Philadelphia. After New York enacted marriage equality last year, Bloomberg said the freedom to marry in his state has, quote, only made New York stronger, and extending the right to all American citizens is only a matter of time. Bloomberg added that he would welcome President Obama speaking out unequivocally on marriage equality. So far, the president has said only that his views on the issue are, quote, evolving. Los Angeles Mayor Villaraigosa, who is president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, emphasized the need to set aside partisan divisions, saying that, quote, the more support we build in our cities and states, the stronger the case we will make for extending the freedom to marry. And he added, I've often said in L.A. that it doesn't matter who your father is, and hopefully it won't matter if you have two of them. If we truly believe in family values, then we should value all families. San Diego Mayors Jerry Sanders, a Republican member of the coalition who testified during the Prop 8 trials in 2010, said, while he wasn't always a supporter of marriage equality, his views have shifted, and in regard to same-sex relationships, there's no such thing as fair enough. He added, I can't look anyone in the face and tell them that the relationship is any less meaningful than the marriage to my wife. And here locally, a Santa Rosa family has been featured in a documentary called The Right to Love, an American Family. The world premiere of this film is scheduled for February 6th in the Castro Theater in San Francisco. This will be the first public screening of this documentary, directed by multi-award-winning documentarian and Marin County filmmaker Casey Jay. The film follows Jay, who's a deputy sheriff for the city and county of San Francisco, and his partner, Brian LeFou, who is a stay-at-home dad with their two adopted kids, Danielle and Selena. They all live in Santa Rosa. Jay Foxworthy and Brian LeFou decided to register as domestic partners in 1998. They joined a civil union ceremony and were married when it became legal to do so. In 2006, they were directed to True Life Children's Services, a gay-friendly adoption agency here in Sonoma County. It wasn't long before Selena and Danielle, biological siblings, were placed in the couple as foster children. The connection was strong, and soon thereafter, the couple adopted the 5-year-old boy and his 1-year-old sister. After Proposition 8 passed in 2008, the LeFou family started to feel the law was impacting them. And like many same-sex couples, they couldn't believe this was happening in the most liberal California. Jay and Brian began posting their home videos on a YouTube channel they called Gay Family Values to show how normal and loving a gay family can be. Their show became a hit, and the couple has posted some 270 videos in the past 3 years, with many more to come. Jay said, "We hope this documentary, The Right to Love, An American Family, can help people see the issue of marriage equality and same-sex families in a new light. It's so easy for one to think of these issues as ideas or concepts that you agree or disagree with. It turns into something else when you know that these are matters of life and love for real people who have real names. You probably know many of them." You can learn more about Jay and Brian from their website at www.gay-family-values.com. And there'll be two screenings of The Right to Love, An American Family, both taking place on February 6th at the Castro Theater. The first one's at 4 p.m. and is geared for young people. Those with a student ID get in free. General admission is $10. The 7:30 p.m. screening costs $20 and includes a red carpet event. You can learn more and get tickets at www.brownpapertickets.com. Search for event number 221824. Or you can visit the documentary's website at www.r2lmovie.com. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Tuesday, January 24th at 1:30 p.m., the Santa Rosa Senior Group will meet at the Glacier Center in Santa Rosa. And also on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., Transgender North Bay meets at Positive Images, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. On Thursday, January 26th at noon, the Women's Brown Bag Lunch discussion happens at 30 North San Pedro Road in San Rafael. And also on Thursday at 6:30 p.m., Men's Peer-to-Peer HIV Group happens at the Face-to-Face Center, 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. And finally, on Friday, January 27th, from noon to 9:30 p.m., the Napa Gorilla Bar will participate in Dine and Dance, an event that will help with the burial costs for Quinn Burgess, a 14-year-old Napa student who took his own life. This happens at Sushi Mambo, 1202 1st Street in Napa. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Now, right here on KRCB-FM, Santa Rosa.
And welcome back. This is Jeff Basham, and we are pleased to joining us our first group tonight. We have a huge show in store for you for the next hour here on KRCB. So occasionally we have an opportunity to hear about an individual or a group that are making their community a better place to live. And this is definitely one of those nights. We have the board of directors from the Friends of Rio Nido, which is a group that is beautifying and making Rio Nido a better place to live out in West County, joining us in studio tonight. Large group. So we're going to go around the table here and introduce everyone so that you can hear their voices, and then we'll get into the interview. So Jennifer, kick us off. Tell us about your involvement with the group. And what you remember, what you do on the board of directors.
My name is Jennifer Ostrom, and I am the treasurer on the board. So I take checks and put them in the bank, and
that's always fun.
Yeah, do that rather dry duty of some accounting. I'm also head of the beautification committee for Friends of Rio Nido.
Wonderful. So that was the right word to use then, beautification, beautifying.
Yes.
Yes. Good. And Kim.
Hi, I'm Kim Holliday. I'm heading up the communications groups. So it's basically two of us on the board that do that, Marcy and I. I do the emails. So I send out the email blasts that inform people of our meetings and give notes. And I participate in a lot of the committees as well.
Wonderful. Thank you for being here, Kim. And Marcy?
My name is Marcy Hinnan, and I am the secretary for the Friends of Rio Nido. So I do a lot of little things here and there, making sure, you know, we fill out the right forms as well as hit the mailbox once a week.
Certainly.
And I am also part of the community development committee that we have.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And of course, taking all those minutes, keeping track of what goes on. And next up is John.
Hi, I'm John Uniak. I'm the president, and I'm responsible for agendas and starting a lot of documents and laying back and make sure all these other people do all the jobs I should be doing.
Great. Thank you, John. It's great to see such a wonderful group formed for Rio Nido. And last is Matt.
Hi, I'm Matt Malik. I'm the vice president. I kind of work as an idea man and a little bit of a motivator for our group, I'm on the beautification committee, and I try and come up with ideas to make our community look and feel a little bit better for everybody.
Great, great. Well, certainly a lot of people might be saying, Rio Nido, where is that? I've never heard of that. So can one of you tell us where Rio Nido is in Sonoma County and maybe a little bit about its history?
As the president, I took on that responsibility. Rio Nido is approximately 14 miles off of Highway 1 on River Road heading west.
Highway 101?
101.
101.
And it's approximately a mile and a half from Guerinville heading east. It's been in existence for more than 100 years. Originally, the area was logged by the Corbell family for lumber for San Francisco. And then in the early 1900s, it was subdivided. And there's a little question there, but I think it was eventually taken by the Eagle Lodge, and they got it for their members.
Okay.
And acquired the name of Eagle's Nest, which is what the newsletter of the Eagle Association is named.
Okay.
It has evolved since then with the name change in 1910 of Rio Nido as one word. In 1947, it was changed to Rio Nido, two words.
Okay.
It was developed as residential for San Francisco people when the trains came, and it developed a pretty large commercial area, which contained, you know, grocery stores, souvenir shops, grill, movie theater, dance hall, several other type of shops, and the Rio Nido Hotel.
And a bowling alley, I think.
There might have been a bowling alley, too. The town has grown over the years from becoming sort of not being well taken care of after the fire in the early 60s that burnt most of the commercial area down.
And where was the commercial area located in terms of what we know Rio Nido to be today?
When you're coming off of River Road, you're taking the right turn into Rio Nido on the Canyon 2 entrance. The whole area there was commercial.
Oh, okay.
And also, if you went around down Canyon 7 and then went up Willow, on that side you had a lot of commercial also. So it was all pretty much contained in the front part of Rio Nido. The only real buildings that are still left there are the old post office building, which is not used for the post office anymore, and the lodge building, which now is only used for the Pegasus Theater, which is now in production of Sylvia for the next few weeks for those who would like to attend. 8 o'clock Friday, Saturday, and then 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Great. Thanks for that information. I'm sure that our regular listeners of KRCB have heard plenty about Sylvia, too.
The town progressed. When I got up there, I've been there 38 years, and at that time, the town was in a state of decay, and then it picked up later on in the 70s when the gay movement came to the river and started to refurbish a lot of the whole area.
So is Rio Nido, I'm jumping ahead in the questions here, but is Rio Nido, what's the percentage of Rio Nido that's LGBT?
I don't know, but it's very well mixed. There's a large group of people, and they're all sort of mixed around, and everybody seems to get along, and nobody really asks what you are there.
Exactly. Yeah, that's been my experience. Yeah. For full disclosure, I should say that I am a resident of Rio Nido, in addition to being a host of this segment. Uh-huh. So we'll move on to talking about your organization, the Friends of Rio Nido, and how it was formed, and a little bit about the history of the Friends of Rio Nido.
Yeah, good question, Jeff. This is Kim. And we started out sort of organically. We sort of call ourselves a grassroots organization because we had a developer. He calls himself a redeveloper, Dennis Judd, who owns the lodge. And he had a meeting when he first bought it and really invited the entire community to give him ideas on how they what he might do with the lodge. And we had quite a turnout at that meeting and never had convened in quite that way as a community, as far as I know. And
when was this?
This was December of 2009.
Okay.
And then at that meeting, there was just so much feedback. Some of it was frustration and even anger a little bit and all sorts of ideas. Jennifer actually came with this pretty printout that we still tease her about today about all her grand ideas. We all came to that meeting with some fantastic inspiration.
That's great.
And so Dennis at one point was sort of saying, well, I'm trying to get feedback on the lodge and not all this other stuff. And we said, gosh, we need to meet outside of this.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
So we basically started another group. We met at the firehouse at one point. Roadhouse is a common meeting place of ours, especially in inclement weather. Yes. And out at the Rio Nita Homeowners Association picnic tables. So we just continue to meet every 6 weeks or so. And I sort of started out as a bit of an unwilling volunteer in facilitating the meetings. We didn't really have a leader. We didn't have a board. We were just sort of getting together to sort of come up with ideas. And we were initially the Rio Nita Task Force. And then as we started to realize that, gosh, this is sort of something, we decided to become the Friends of Rio Nito and started to pursue 501c3. So that's how this board came about. We actually held votes and developed bylaws and become much more formal in our structure and achieved 501c3 status in May of last year. We're very proud of that. And
that's a big step.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's a wonderful, just the heart that was there in getting everyone together.
Yeah.
Sounds like it was just a bunch of concerned citizens that wanted to make their community a better place.
Yeah, it was amazing, actually, how many of us had so many of the same thoughts, and we weren't sharing them with each other. We weren't convening to say, what could we do about this? And yes, that bugs me, too. And some really amazing people, too, that I was happy in Rio Nita, loved it, but I didn't know my community. And I just, I can't say enough about the people that I've met through this effort and the kinds of people that have stepped up and gotten interested and just chip in any way that we can. We have so many creative solutions to problems.
And I'm sure there's all kinds of citizens of Rio Nito who regard the group and have nothing but good things to say about the group.
We've gotten some lovely emails and donations.
Sure.
I think Jennifer's going to talk a bit about that. But just sort of gotten some very slow but clear momentum, and it's a beautiful
thing to
be a part of.
That's great. And I know from personal experience it takes a lot to get a 501c3 and do all that paperwork, and I'm really proud of you guys for doing that. That's wonderful.
Well, I think between the five of us on the board, we all have different talents, and so it really took each, you know, different people with different efforts to do that.
Great.
Very lucky.
Great. So who is going to tell us about projects that you've done?
Okay, I'm going to do that.
Matt's going to do that.
Yep.
So tell us about some of the projects that you've completed.
One of the first social events that we had that worked out really great was a centennial celebration that Kim helped organize. That was in December of 2010. And we were kind of all shocked when we had a turnout of about 150 residents. Many of them brought their kids to see. We had a Santa Claus, and many of them brought their kids to see Santa Claus. And it was a really great vibe celebration. Everybody got along terrific, and everybody was surprised to see so many of their neighbors out at one of these events. That happening, it gave us, I think it really helped give us a little boost to start some of our other projects. Some of them revolved around the beautification committee. We had a street sign cleanup where we formed different groups and some pickup trucks and went around and washed all the street signs down. We took pictures of the signs that needed repair, and we submitted it to county. County repaired all the signs that we requested to be repaired, in addition to adding other signs, so now you can actually drive around Rio Nito and not get lost.
Yeah, in our discussion before the show, I was talking about how I used to give friends directions to my house based on other houses and colors of houses, and well, that was a little hard to do at night in the dark, and so
it was really hard to do. When we first went there to shop for our house, we couldn't find it, and we almost turned around and left. We were just a minute, and then I noticed a little street up at the end, and we found it.
Okay.
Another project that we did was we worked with the Sweetwater Springs Water District and repaired all the bollards around the fire hydrants. Sweetwater power sprayed all the fire hydrants for us and gave us some paint. And we formed groups and went around and in one morning repainted all the fire hydrants in Rio Nido.
Wonderful. How many fire hydrants are there in Rio Nido?
24.
Okay. I figured you would know the answer to that question.
And not including the standing pipes. We didn't have to deal with them. We had two major neighborhood cleanups that Jennifer helped organize with the North Bay Corporation and the county. The first cleanup was quite intense. We had quite a few volunteers, and we were scourging through the ravines, pulling up all sorts of garbage that had acquired over the years. After we were finished with that, we opened up the rest of the cleanup to the community, which was terrific. The second cleanup, the community seemed to stay pretty clean, so we were able to open that up mainly to the whole community, and we had a great turnout. The citizens were all just complimentary to us that we were organized about the whole event.
That's right.
John was helpful in getting some new yield signs, traffic signs posted. He worked with the county. We have markings on the roads now.
I think that's the it's the thing that I notice the most when I'm driving through Rio Nido. It's like, yay, all these new signs and all these new paint markings on the road. So that's wonderful. Thank you for doing that, John.
Yeah. It wasn't just me.
Oh, well, of course. But you did go out and paint a lot of them, I understand.
We did not.
Oh, yeah. You didn't. Oh,
the
okay.
The county
I'm sorry.
Painted
okay.
all of those signs.
Oh, okay.
And it was part of an infrastructure project, and it ended up pretty much that Kim Holliday and I worked with the county to get that done and approved through the Board of Supervisors and funded.
Wonderful.
So that happened.
Wonderful. And excellent segue. And Matt, was there anything else you wanted to say before we move on?
Oh, I was going to say we posted some neighborhood watch signs, which have been helpful to let people know that the neighbors are watching the neighborhood.
Great.
We also did a fountain repair. There's a fountain that has some historical significance. As far as we could tell, we think it was created around 1915 after a major flood. And it's on private land, but the property owner allowed us to power spray it down, and we repainted it. And we're hopeful that we might be able to work with the county and attaining some type of historical designation for it.
Great, great. So, you, John, a minute ago, you mentioned about funding, and so it's going to be Jennifer, talk about how projects are funded, and also if you're looking for additional funding and involvement from the community in that regard.
Absolutely, we are. Our cleanups have been funded through collaboration with North Bay Corporation and the County of Sonoma, but mainly members of Friends of Rio Nido have contributed a great deal towards our projects. And our recent achievement of nonprofit status will enable us to apply for grants and accomplish a lot more within the community. We are always looking for new members and help from local businesses and whatnot to continue our work in the community.
Great. Are there any particular businesses that have done a lot that you want to give a shout out to on the radio?
Oh, let's see. The Rio Nido Roadhouse has provided us generously with snacks and a place to have meetings. Most
Wonderful.
Of our meetings have been there.
Great.
And North Bay Corporation has done a lot for our cleanups, and we've appreciated that a great deal.
Great. We always like to recognize those businesses that take care of efforts.
And we've got PayPal on the website as of today, too. I think Marcy's going to talk about the fantastic website that she and her husband put together for our group. But that's great news for us, too.
Great, great. So what do you all see as the future of Rio Nido? Are you thinking about incorporation, perhaps?
I'll take that one. It's John again. It's too small of a village to think about incorporation. incorporation was talked about for the Guerinville area many years ago, and the financial aspect of it did not work out. So we will stay unincorporated. I personally would like to see the town become, in other words, to bloom more. It's sort of like in a bud state now, and you know, it's ready to open and bloom and become something like it was before.
Great, great. Yeah, I see that happening. I see a lot of residents and a lot of the area out in West County starting to come back out of the recession a little bit at a time. You know, things are starting to reopen. For example, the formerly known as the Russian River Resort, the Triple R, is now the R3 Hotel. It's reopened. So there's a lot of stuff happening there that's nice.
And I think this is Kim. This is not just coming out of the economic problems, but also people, I think, are tolerating less what they used to now that we've started this conversation about what we don't like. And I'll just call up other people, and we've got people just picking up stuff out of trucks that they just do on their own now. So we've really inspired people to say, no, that's not acceptable anymore.
That's great.
If I could expand upon
yes,
that too, this is
please,
Jennifer.
Please.
And returning Rio Nido to, I guess what was really its glory days, where it was revered as a place where well-to-do people came and enjoyed live music and spent their summers, and so we've talked a lot about reestablishing a beach for the community, and really sprucing up the fountain that is at the entrance, and also maybe reclaiming the lodge at some point for the community, and having it be it is a really iconic building.
It is.
To resurrect it and have it be something for the community and something that would maybe be a boon to the financial situation there. A big concern of mine has been the environment in Rio Nido. We live in an absolutely gorgeous place, and our group is working really hard at being better stewards of our environment there, cleaning up watersheds and making sure that illegal logging comes to an end and such things to keep it healthy and beautiful.
Good. That's always great. So we're coming up to the end of this segment, but I'd like to invite Marcy to not only, one, talk about your website, but also talk about where people can go to learn more about the Friends of Rio Nido, Rio Nido as a town, and just how they can get involved.
So we do have a website, and you can find us at rionido.net/FRN. But in there you can see there's a way to donate online with PayPal, or you can also just send us a check, which works just equally as well. And you can send anything, questions or anything to that at the address I'm going to give you. It's P.O. Box 184, Rio Nido, California, 95471. We also have a phone number.
And can you repeat that address one more time for people
sure.
who may have missed it?
It's P.O. Box 184, Rio Nido, California, 95471.
And your phone number?
It's 707-200-FRN1, or I can spell out the numbers for you. So it's 3761, and I'll say it again one more time, 707-200-3761. Or you can email us, which is always an easy way to contact us, at frn@rionido.net.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for all that wonderful information. And just like to, in our last minute here, go around and say, see if there's any last comments from anyone before we go on. And you want to talk about the website
a
little bit?
Yeah, I can just tell you.
Yeah.
We do have just a community website. It's not dedicated just to the Friends of Rio Nido, but it's just dedicated to the entire community. So on there, you're going to see things like the upcoming plays that we have at Pegasus. You'll see what music's coming up at the Rio Nido Roadhouse. We have a lot of history on there. So if anybody is curious to see what Rio Nido looked like in the 1940s or 50s, when we had a huge amount of bands coming through every single summer, people were dancing till 3 a.m. every night. So you can see it all there on the website.
One more thing, if I can. We have members, 150 now, and there's two types of members. members who live or own property in Rio Nido and people who are sympathetic to what we're doing in Rio Nido. And the brochure is on the website. You can download it, fill it out, mail it to us, and you can become a member of Rio Nido.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you very much to the Friends of Rio Nido for joining us on Outbeat Now. The time is now 8:30.
Support for Outbeat Radio comes from the Tallman Hotel and Blue Wing Saloon Restaurant in Upper Lake. Located 30 minutes east of Ukiah off Highway 20, the Tallman is a 17-room country hotel with a bar, pool, spa, and meeting facilities. You can learn more at tallmanhotel.com or by giving them a call at area code 707-275-2244. And welcome back, everyone. Of course, that was Lady Gaga with The Edge of Glory from her Born This Way album. You're listening to Outbeat now on KRCB FM, Santa Rosa. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment. And welcome, everyone, to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about LGBT youth here in the North Bay and beyond. And, of course, you'll find us here every month as part of Outbeat Now. It's our first segment of the year. I'm totally excited about having a full studio with all live guests from some of my favorite people to talk about some pretty exciting things. We've got Dr. Ardell Thomas, who is the chair of the LGBT Studies Program at San Francisco City College. She's brought some of her students, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves here in a minute. And also Professor Diana Shabodi from Napa Valley College, one of my colleagues. And both colleges have partnered together to put on an LGBT Studies program that's really exciting. So we're here to talk about that tonight. But let's hear from these students who traveled up here from San Francisco and Berkeley. Why don't you just introduce yourselves and tell us how long you've been at City College?
My name is Benjamin Marmoleo, and I've been at City College four or five semesters now. I am a gender and sexuality major.
Very good.
My name is Deirdre Clyde. I've actually transferred from City College already, but I was there for 4 years. I started out slow. I'm an anthropology major, and I'm going to be graduating from UC Berkeley in May.
UC Berkeley, Ardell's got to be pretty proud of that. Finn?
Hi, my name is Finn Gardner. I'm also a student at City College, and I've been at City since fall 2009. I am a sociology major, and I'm considering double majoring in sociology and LGBT studies, and I'm currently preparing to graduate from City College.
Outstanding. Well, Ardell, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you arrived at being the chair of the LGBT studies program at City College.
Well, I think it in many ways started back in the 1980s when I was at the University of Colorado Boulder. I was a women's studies major there, and I had some professors there who were doing groundbreaking work in what we would now call LGBT studies or queer studies. And my whole trajectory wound up being, you know, queer studies, as it turned out. I came to California to do my PhD at Stanford in modern thought and literature, and my concentration there was on 19th century British sexuality and race, looking at the intersections of empire and a lot of really restrictive imperial laws as well as restrictive laws surrounding sexuality and gender. For City College, I'm just incredibly fortunate. I'd had my eye on that department. We were the first department in the United States and the second in the world. And I applied, and some days I still can't believe I got the job in 2005. And it's been amazing, and my students are amazing.
Excellent. And Diana, I'm going to jump in here a little bit with you to have you tell us a little bit about how you ended up at Napa Valley College and what you do there.
I've been at Napa Valley College for all total about 15, 16 years, full-time for the last 10. I coordinate the Child and Family Studies program, which offers the courses in Child and Family Studies and in education at the campus. And so we get a lot of our students are going into early education, but we also get a lot of students that are looking at teaching in our K-12 system as well.
And that is a big part of the program there, and also the link as to how this LGBT studies program got started, and we'll definitely come back to that. Now, so you mentioned, Ardell, that City College was the first in the country to have a program?
We were the first full department in the United States. I don't want to say we were the first school to have a class, because I've heard from various colleagues who were teaching in Portland, Oregon, or Michigan, who had an LGBT studies class at some point. But City College of San Francisco was the first school in the United States to have a full-fledged, independent standing department. And it was originally called Gay Studies. And then it became Gay and Lesbian Studies. And then it became gay, lesbian, and bisexual studies. Now it is LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender studies. Although I always joke with everybody that the Q, I, and Q are right there. They're on my syllabi, and we're going to continue to add to the alphabet soup.
So the first class, I understand, though, was actually offered back in 1978.
Yes, it was a gay literature course.
And now you've got 25-plus electives.
Yes.
In all kinds of different
It's very
topics.
Interdisciplinary, yes.
Fantastic. So for the students, you know, going to City College, tell me how important it was for you and is for you to have an LGBT studies program, an accredited program available to you. Finn, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think this is incredibly important to me because throughout history, there's been so much erasure of queer identities in culture. You know, there's this idea of heteronormativity and that people whose sexualities and gender identities vary drastically from the idea of compulsory heterosexuality should be ignored and marginalized. And queer studies, you know, puts a critical lens on those ideas and allows people to understand that you don't have to be straight to be important in history. Your identity is fine the way it is. You are who you are. And this has been just a godsend for me as somebody who came from an environment that was decidedly hostile to queer identity and being able to be in an environment that embraces my identity and others' identities for what they are rather than trying to convert them or tell them that their existence should be nullified simply because of who they are, that is amazing for me. And, you know, I am immensely grateful to Ardell and the rest of the Queer Studies Department for providing this resource for all of us, whether queer or allies.
Good to hear. Deirdre, how about for you?
Well, as an anthropology major, I find that queer studies really opens up the anthropological question, that so much of anthropology is about the taken for granted, not taking it for granted, whatever assumption it is within your society or within your culture. And for me, I love the QIQ part of the alphabet soup because I love the idea that everyone should be questioning. And for me, that's what that intersection of queer studies and anthropology does. And what I experienced when I started taking classes from Ardell is that it really helped me sharpen my focus on what I wanted to do with cultural anthropology and to really start to be able to explore those questions of what is normativity, what is gender expression. And I think it frees up everybody, whether they're queer, they identify as queer or not, that the way that quote-unquote straight people express their sexuality or the way that non-trans people express their gender identity can be freer, can be more fluid if they are exposed to these things. So I really think it's terrific to have this available to students of all kinds, wherever they come from.
Now, you mentioned that you're going to be graduating from UC Berkeley, that you transferred there. What's the degree going to look like for you?
It's a bachelor's.
It's a bachelor's degree, but is it going to be in what, anthropology?
In anthropology, yeah. And I have just finished going through the process of applying for several graduate programs around the country, and I'm sticking with anthropology. But it's definitely the sub-discipline of queer anthropology is very robust, especially at Berkeley, and it's considered within the field a very legitimate way of looking into these sorts of questions.
Great. Ben, how about you?
Well, for me, I went to City College immediately after high school, and I was still harboring a lot of the negative feelings and confusion that resulted from the adversity that I dealt with growing up. And City College really gave me an outlet to meet other people like myself. And it also gave me the opportunity to explore my various interests in art, culture, sociology, psychology. There's really something within the field for everybody. It's it's definitely not just a class for people who fit in to the LGBTQ acronym.
Sure. I guess that's a great question. What's your guess on the percentage of straight students or students who identify, at least at this point in their life, as straight versus those who identify as some letter in the alphabet soup?
In my classes?
Sure.
That's really an interesting question. In my online, I teach two online classes every semester. I'm now at the point where I would say 50 to 60% of my students in online identify as heterosexual. And they've come to the class because they have friends or family who are queer.
Okay.
Or they're just interested in a fuller picture of history and art and culture. My in-person classes, you know, this is what I love about City College, is my in-person classes vary widely. And if I have, can I give two quick examples?
Sure.
This semester I have a brand new transgender class. It's a history, art, and culture focused course. Of the 40 students in that class, over half of them identify as transgender or genderqueer. So, I mean, that class has a very special group. I've also got so many returning students in that class who I've worked with in many others, because everyone knows I had been working for some time to get that class ready and through. Another example would be my AIDS in America class. I often, in that class, it usually winds up being predominantly an LGBT group. What becomes even more interesting, though, is over half of that class, pretty much every time I've taught it the last 4 years, over half of the students in there come out as HIV positive, regardless of their age. And so we have some really interesting conversations within the context of that class. But it's all over the board. I mean, the main point is we have lots of ethnic diversity in our classes and lots of socioeconomic diversity and age diversity. LGBT studies really pulls in people from all over. In one class I had, the age range was 17 to 74, and the 74-year-old used to hang out and have beer with Allen Ginsberg.
Oh, wow.
So I'm incredibly blessed to be where I am.
Sure. Well, tell us a little bit more. You're talking about some of these very specialized classes in the program. Tell us about some of the other specialized topics that are available to students.
We have another new class that I am so thrilled. Latin American and Latino Studies and LGBT Studies worked together to bring a brand new queer Latino course. It's being taught for the first time by Mark Piper this semester. And so far, I mean, we've only been in school a week, but it's going beautifully. We also have courses for folks who want to explore their relationships. We've got the lesbian relationships course and the gay male relationships course. Both of those courses also include bisexual and transgender people. We also have the global LGBT art and culture class. We have an anthropology course that's housed in anthropology but cross-listed, taught by Matt Kennedy, which is a phenomenal class, and it's LGBT anthropology. And that actually goes a lot with what Deirdre was talking about, and I believe Deirdre had Matt.
Oh, yes, I enjoyed that course very much.
Yeah, he's great. And we have some of the other classes. We've got an American, a U.S.-focused LGBT art and culture class. And within there, we have a really wonderful, about a four-week session focusing specifically on the Harlem Renaissance. So, and our course offerings change every semester. We have two film classes. So it depends. We have at this point with our new major two specific tracks. Students can focus on the humanities, or they can focus on the social sciences.
And then at the end of that now, they can come out with an AA degree in LGBT studies, right?
Yes, they can.
That's pretty exciting. Are there any other community colleges in the state of California that offer an AA degree in this area?
I don't believe, and I may be going on a limb, I don't believe there are any other community colleges in the United States that offer an AA degree in LGBT studies. I would need to go back and make sure and look at New York.
Okay.
But I believe we are the only one.
Certainly nothing within our listening range.
That's right.
So I'm gonna jump around here a little bit and go to Diana. And let's talk about Napa Valley College. You know, of all the colleges in this area that I would have imagined would have come up with an LGBT studies program other than City College, Napa was not necessarily one that I think would have that happen. Tell us about that. What was the driving force behind getting a new program?
Well, several things kind of collided all at once. One, we're fortunate enough to have the Stop the Hate program on our campus, and which has actually been a fabulous benefit to faculty and staff and our students. We also have a diversity task force plan and an inclusivity committee that's been talking about the need for addressing LGBT issues on our campus. In addition, the Academic Senate for California Community Colleges has done some workshops and has passed some resolutions about LGBT issues on our community college campuses and the need to be more responsive to students. So there's also the campus climate studies and looking at how we can be more welcoming. So on top of that, and also in the courses that I teach, I have many students that work with families that are LGBT and children that come from a variety of different family structures. And they have questions about interaction and how do you address issues of even just simple things like, what do you do when a child has two moms? What do you call them? And so simple things, and then also some very complex issues. So all of these things kind of came together, and actually Greg and I were talking about this, and I go to him as a resource for my classes, and we had this brainstorm about, let's talk about this class. We're doing a class, and I said, oh, that would be awesome. My students will certainly get a lot out of that, and that just kind of morphed into the bigger issue of having a certificate and also the passage of new legislation and the need for our K-12 educators to be more versed in LGBT issues and working with their students. And so it just kind of all morphed together, and we completed it all in record time, got our class through our curriculum committee and also our certificate through our curriculum committee. And in fact, our board of trustees approved it all this past Thursday, and we are very excited. The college has been very responsive to having this program on our campus. The students have expressed a huge interest in this program. We will be running our first class, LGBT 120, in fall of this year. And so we're hoping that it will be a great success.
That's pretty exciting. But I think one of the really unique things about the program at Napa is this partnership with City College. I mean, these are tough times for colleges. All I see in my work is cutting classes and cutting sections and cutting programs. And so to see two colleges really come together to work together to offer this program to students is really terrific. Tell us about this partnership and kind of how it works, either one of you.
Well, we're incredibly fortunate, and Greg, thank you so much for reaching out to City College. But we've, as you said, our budgets are being cut. I've actually had to take our number of class offerings down because of that. And this is a terrific way for our two programs. If there is a course that your students need for your certificate, if Napa Valley does not have that specific class, the student is welcome to come to City College and take the course there. The faculty in LGBT studies, we are all open to leaving room for Napa Valley students as well. Even when our classes are listed as full, if the students get in touch with us, we are holding places for them. For City College students, one of the courses I know that you all will be offering is within religious studies. And interestingly, City College does not have a religious studies course. And I know I've had students who said that they would be interested in coming up here to take that. I just think that as much as our schools can share, it will only benefit our students to be able to interact with each other and to be able to take classes at both schools.
It's really exciting.
Yes.
So the program at NAPA is not a full degree. What is a certificate program exactly?
A certificate program is in general less units than a degree. So our certificate is an 18-unit certificate. So it will go through the chancellor's office, be transcriptable. And we're hoping to also create with Ardell, it's been fabulous working with her and City College, to create a process for students to transfer with our certificate and go to City College and finish up a degree. The certificate gives students, I would say, like a solid foundation in the subject matter. And then they can go on for some more detailed and advanced studies over at City College.
Terrific. And are there other transfer options? I understand San Diego State University now has a four-year bachelor's program in LGBT studies.
They do. And actually, as you know, Greg, that you and I met with the person who will become the new chair at San Diego State University, Esther Rothblum, and San Diego State is looking forward to continuing to work with us in the future. And I think it's fantastic that we've got these three schools ready to work with each other and help students. And I think it's also really terrific that, I mean, San Diego, you know, so my students are packing their swim trunks, I think. They're ready.
That's great. That's great. And, of course, we also know that there is a minor studies program right here at Sonoma State University, and I believe Napa Valley College is going to be contacting them and looking at some possibilities there.
Absolutely.
As well, which is great. Diana, you mentioned the new legislation that's passed, the Fair and Inclusive Education Act, which is, as hopefully all of you know, a requirement that teachers in public schools teach LGBT history. Will this program at Napa and also at City College support those teachers that want to get better prepared?
Absolutely. We are actually hoping to engage with the unified districts around us and give them the information about the course and hopefully get some teachers in our course so that they can get some of that information that they're going to need for their students in their classes.
It's funny that you mentioned that, Greg. Just really quickly, I actually have a meeting Tuesday night with San Francisco Unified School District on this topic. And so I'm actually very much looking forward. They've asked me to help with curriculum development. So.
And we're coming up on the end of the hour here, but real quickly, these classes are open to everybody because it's a community college program, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So go on the web, Google search City College of San Francisco and Napa Valley College. We'll have both of those links actually on the Outbeat Youth website at outbeatyouth.com, and you can find out all the information you need for how to enroll. I think the cost of the course now might be a whole $138 plus the price of books, which is just a bargain, you know, in terms of education. I'd like to thank you all for being with us tonight. Ardell, Diana, Finn, Ben, Deidre, thank you so much for being with us on Outbeat Youth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that wraps up this edition of Outbeat Youth. Remember, you can follow us all month long on Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. You can listen and download past shows on iTunes as well as on our website at outbeatyouth.com. Jeff and I will be back on the fourth Sunday of February talking about cruise vacations. Jeff's heading off to a cruise here in a couple of weeks, and I just got back from one. We're going to be talking with the owner of Stonewall Tours, Jim West, who's an expert on cruise vacations, and he'll share his thoughts with us about how to plan the best cruise vacation. We'll also have Ian Stanley from Voices of Napa joining us on the Outbeat Youth segment to talk about what he's doing with his organization there in Napa to support LGBT youth. Be sure to tune in next Sunday night for a special edition of Outbeat Extra. Gary Carnevale and I will be talking with some of the candidates who hope to replace Lynn Woolsey. And then next Sunday night, of course, right here on KRCB Radio. In the meantime, have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday evening with us.